Hello, everyone. My name is Joan Devine, and I'm the Director of Education with Pioneer Network. I'd like to welcome you to our latest episode of Pioneer Network's Listen, Learn, Explore series, Creating a Learning Organization. With me today are five very talented individuals who share a passion for growing and supporting person-directed cultures and creating new and innovative educational opportunities. Anna Ortegaro is a gerontological nurse specialist, formerly with the Greenhouse Project and PHI, who is now doing independent consulting. Marla DeVries is the Chief Learning Officer with the Greenhouse Project. Tim Knight is Executive Director of Organizational Development and Training with Pebblebrook at Park Springs in Georgia. His colleague Jackie Hurt is Licensed Assistant Living Administrator with Park Springs Health Services in Georgia. And John Hogday is the CEO and founder of Healthcare Interactive. This dynamic group of educators have joined forces, along with Carrie Shisano, Executive Director for Presbyterian Senior Care Network Dementia Care Center of Excellence, that's a mouthful, who's unable to be with us today. And they have come together to do a great series of four sessions that will be featured at the 2022 Pioneering a New Culture of Aging Conference this coming July in Denver. But we can't wait for July for the learning to begin. And so in today's podcast, they will be sharing their thoughts on why supporting learning and development is so critical and what it can mean to you and to your organization. This whole idea for the program started with a call from Anna. So that seems like a logical place for us to start our podcast. Anna, welcome. And can you tell us a little bit about how this educational series came to be and why it's so important right now?
Well, Joan, frankly, I don't know if I called you or you called me, but we were talking about the conference. So excited to come to Denver to be live with all of our colleagues this summer. And as we were thinking about and just shooting ideas, what would be motivating and really important to bring to forward for the conference this year, I was just thinking about education. And I think I was really focused on that because I've had a chance to talk to many organizations, be with different organizations, I'll admit mostly through Zoom over the last 2 years, and hear their struggles around how can they keep at the forefront their education, their initiatives that when they were just being challenged to focus on COVID, even education shifted to COVID, so much education focusing on the disease and protocols and new CDC information, that a lot of the things that built their culture and built team members and brought new staff onto their teams and to understand the values of their organization, it felt like it keeps getting marginalized and pushed to the side because leaders are so focused, and at the time of turnover as well, just getting people hired, getting them in, trying to stabilize them. I've heard from organizations, they feel like they've struggled to keep their eye on the ball of education. And so it seemed like, wow, the conference could be a time for people to step back and think about what are our educational goals? How does education support our transformation? And then maybe develop a bit of a plan and a strategy to go back to their organizations. So that's a long answer, but it felt like this is a huge need of organizations right now as they're trying to reengage.
Absolutely. And I think on some of the other things we also talked about, the fact is, you know, one group that we have never really done a very specific focus for at any conferences or any of our trainings is mm-hmm. how to help the educators, the person in that community right. who is doing the education. That lots of programs on how to introduce culture change 101, but it's so much more than that.
Right, right. And I'll just say one other thing. When we were talking, I didn't perceive that this was that what we could do at the conference was like a train the trainer where, okay, here's a culture change curricula and here's how to teach it. Really something a little bit bigger than that, pulling back from that to saying, what does it look like to be a learning organization? And let's talk about those concepts together in a lot of different aspects so people can really reconsider what they want that to be in their organization.
Absolutely. And I think that kind of brings us to our next question. We have Jackie and Tim are here with us from an organization that has been very well recognized as a learning organization, and so bring a very special expertise. So maybe share a little bit, you know, as Anna said, it's been an interesting and tough couple of years for everyone. So lots of aspects to educating staff that have been very challenging before COVID and certainly through COVID and because of what we've been through with COVID. So what do you see as some of the challenges right now, and how are you addressing them? How would you help others to address them?
Well, one of the biggest struggles that we've seen is the staffing and just the labor shortage that everyone else has experienced throughout this pandemic, and really having to be creative and investing in supporting our employees so that they aren't turning over, so that we're keeping a consistent staff, because as we all know, consistency leads to quality care. And it's really hard to ensure quality if you don't have that consistency and you have the turnover. So really investing in those staff members and allowing them to feel part of the organization and well supported.
Yeah, one of the other things is that, you know, COVID kind of drilled into people, you know, the infection control and keeping people safe. And so now, as a learning organization with our model of care, there's still some of that fear of changing the culture of working towards opening back up. And, you know, our brains are really designed to find peace in knowing what's going on. And if we don't know what's coming, we make up a scenario. So our job as trainers is to really support, encourage, motivate, model the behaviors, and really let our staff know that it's okay to be afraid of the change, but that the change is going to make life better for all the people that we care about.
Wow, quite a challenging job you have to do.
And, you know, it also forces, as educators, it forces us to be very creative in how we deliver that training, because we have to fit the trainings into the care and the everyday life in the household. So it's forced us to really think differently about how we provide that training. And, you know, breaking it down, chunking it up, doing some on-the-job training, getting out there in the households and really just, you know, coaching and mentoring the team versus, you know, expecting that they're going to come in for an 8-hour in-service. And so we've had to really be forced to be creative in, you know, creating micro-learnings and allowing the leaders in the household to really be able to just incorporate that into kind of the daily happenings in the household, because you can't just expect, you know, if we're working, you know, a little challenged, that we can just pull people out for those long trainings. So, you know, it's really challenged us as leaders to do that.
Yeah, yeah, somebody, you know, it's even about kind of location, like where do we do the training? You know, do we pull everybody out of the household and go to a big conference room, or do we find a spot within the household to do training and present what we can there so that they can model it right at the time? You know, doing some different hours instead of expecting the night shift people or night care partners to come in, we come in at night. So we might do a session from 10 p.m. to midnight for them so that they still have their quality of life. There's just, we've just looked at all different types of changes, and it's all about being flexible. And it's all about knowing that your team is going to have some really great outcomes when you move mountains for them.
There you go. And that's surely appreciated by your teams. You know, I have to tell you, this makes me think, I started my profession as an activity professional. I think you did too, Jackie, didn't you?
No, but you
are one. but it makes me think of, you know, the activity calendar. You know, the old school was that if you had a full activity calendar, that meant you must have a great activity program. And we've learned that that's not true. I think the same thing we always sometimes thought about education. If I can show you this great calendar and all these things that are on there that I'm presenting, I must have a great education program. And we've learned that it is so much more than what we can put on a calendar or a piece of paper. It's the how and the why and the when and the where that you've talked about. And that certainly leads us to a question that, John, I'd like to ask you to maybe field a little bit. You know, in larger organizations like like Park Springs, they have the ability to have Tim and Jackie and educators that are there for them, dedicated to that process. But so many smaller communities just don't have that. So education is kind of divvied out to a variety of different people who come with different skill sets, not always a background in education and training. So how do we support those people? How do we help them create that learning organization?
Yeah, thanks, Joan. As I was thinking about this question, my head just went immediately to the disadvantages for smaller organizations. They may not have that dedicated educator. Education may not be the, I think importantly, we're all educators. So we love education, where our minds are in it, but education may not be the specialty of these individuals. And, you know, they're doing the best that they can, but it's super challenging, especially with the challenges of COVID that you guys just mentioned. There are advantages, though, also that I kind of thought about for the smaller organizations, smaller teams who maybe know each other better by those serving in that educational role, just by virtue of having a smaller team. Maybe it's easier to deliver some of the education, more of a, I think of it as a small hometown feel to the organization, having grown up in a small farming community. Maybe I'm just kind of superimposing that, but I think the smaller organizations, even within a city, can just have that smaller feel to them. And, you know, with not as many people to train, you're not training hundreds and hundreds. You may be training 20, 30, 40. It's sometimes easier to facilitate those. Just what you guys are saying, to get everyone in a room, 10 or 15 at a time, when you're serving hundreds is a lot of sessions. If you're serving 30, you might be able to get that done in two or three. And importantly, one thing that I've seen in the work I've done with organizations at different sizes is smaller organizations have just fewer decision-making challenges, maybe, as opposed to larger organizations. You know, there's an idea, they come up with a plan, it gets a stamp of approval, and we can proceed, as opposed to sometimes if an organization, I think, is much larger, there's just more approval processes and whatnot. So to the question about how to support our smaller organizations, I had a couple of ideas. Healthcare Interactive, my company, produces an online training program called CARES. There's a lot of online training and certification programs out in the marketplace. There's a lot of organizations who have developed their own. But I think the number one thing for supporting an educator that isn't an educator, you know, a DON or activity professional, or even the administrator, him or herself, is just choosing a high quality structured training program of some sort, whatever that is. So you're not, you're not an educator to begin with, and dementia in this case may not be your background or your specialty. So just choosing something that has, a strong background, I think, is really important for the smaller organizations. Supporting non-educators with professional training ideas was another thought that I had. Encouraging short training opportunities. So, you know, we think of training, how do we get people in the room? But I like what was also said previously, the small team huddles. We encourage a lot of role plays with CARES has this five-step method to dementia care, this five-step approach. So, you know, doing role plays and staff can be 5 minutes, but it just helps maybe reinforce the training. And then something that a friend of Pioneer Network, Jean Hyde Grubman, is very famous in doing in my conversations with her, are behavior breakdowns. If something happens behaviorally, an expression of behavior occurs with a resident, she'll literally sit down with some of her staff members and walk through what happened and try to break it down. So one-on-one or in a staff meeting talking about it. Another idea, and this kind of ties into Anna's new role, is bring in an educational consultant to help some of the non-educators in smaller organizations. And then I was also just thinking about, you know, how do we help educators the most, really in any organization, but in the small ones? How do we make their jobs easier? And for me, you make your job easier by getting the training done and encouraging staff. So some things that we would say to a customer and someone using our training programs is think about incentives that trainers or staff could tie into. I love to say recognition is free, recognize staff members or in smaller communities, especially oftentimes a local newspaper will do a story or print, you know, people who were in our case certified in a particular month have financial incentives. There are organizations who tie career ladder development or training to financial, you know, higher hourly rates. In my experience, and maybe you guys, few and far between. I mean, it's the rare organization in my world that has the resources or chooses to do that. But there are other ways. Joan, you mentioned you're from the St. Louis or live in the St. Louis area. We had a organization call us years ago and say, I'm having so much trouble getting my staff through the training program, you know, this online format. And we came up with the idea of some gift card drawings of staff, if staff got through the program by a certain date. And we just suggested maybe two $25 gift cards. And she said, you know what? I love the idea. I'm doing two $75 gift cards. She had 80% of her staff through the program within 30 days. And so in fact, I was just speaking with another organization this past week. We put a letter together that would go out to families that basically says, we're trying to support our staff. We're trying to make education fun and give something back to them. If you're like me, the line we put in, you probably have a pile of gift cards sitting in your desk drawer. Would you consider donating one of them so that we can have a raffle for our staff members? And that's just current as of this week, but just really thinking about how to recognize and support people. I have an organization down in Alabama who so loved the program. They made a big banner for the outside of the building that said, our staff are trained and certified in dementia care and are in the CARES program. But, you know, I'm a staff member. I have many other options. I have Target. I have Walgreens. I have, you know, there's a lot easier care than direct care with our elders. That is for sure. But when you come in and you see a big banner making a big deal, when you read an article, when you're recognized, we suggest that our certification certificates get posted on a wall or by the nursing station so that staff get that level of recognition. It takes some organization and it takes some effort by someone someone to do it, for sure. But it's so meaningful, I think, and that, I mean, it just, you might even make the connection with job turnover and recognition so that if people feel like they're learning and being recognized and appreciated, one of our organizations up in Vancouver had monthly, parties with a big, they called them CARES cakes. They'd have a bakery put together a big CARES cake, and anyone who finished the program that month could come in over the lunch hour or during their shift and have a piece of cake, and people loved it. They had a outdoor picnic area that they did it in the summer. So I guess my thoughts are just, you know, how it goes beyond, and maybe those are suggestions for any size, but I just really am thinking and cognizant about people thrust in the education role when they don't have that background. So how can we help support them? So those are some ideas.
Those are great ideas, John. And I think having fun and creative in education is so very important, again, for whatever size organization you are. But you also, what you have shared, and Tim and Jackie and Anna before you, that education is so much more than just that point in time when the training is happening. It really is about learning as a process, not just an event. And Marla, can you share a little bit about just what do we mean by that?
Sure. Well, I was just going to say, I think that, you know, Tim and Jackie and John and Anna have really given a lot of great examples about that. And on my computer screen, I have a quote by John Cotter, which is transformation is a process, not an event. And certainly when we think about culture change or cultural transformation, we know it's not just this programmatic, you know, thing you do. It's really this longer process. And so the same is true with learning. And it starts with, what's the purpose of training? It's not just to check the box, get people through. It's not just about compliance. It's that we want to, you know, increase their knowledge about something. We want to improve their skills or develop their skills, or we want to shift their attitude and how they think about things. And ultimately, we want them to go through training because we want to have better outcomes, whether that's, you know, quality of life or quality of care for the residents, you know, better teamwork. I mean, so that's the purpose. So how can we go about that? And oftentimes I think we do think about training or education or learning as an event, let's just get them through, as Tim mentioned, that 8-hour in-service and check the box, we'll be glad. And yet, are we satisfied that we're getting the outcome we want that way? And so what I learned a few years back was typically when you look at how we invest in training and learning, 85% of resources, whether that's, you know, dollars, human capital, is spent on focusing on the training itself, what happens. And about 10% of our time and energy is on the pre-work, and 5%, only 5% is what happens once they walk outside of that classroom. And so if you shift and you think of it instead of, we're going to devote 40% of our resources to the front and back end and 20% of our resources to what happens in the classroom. And some of what was described about how do we make it creative in the classroom? How do we make it that it's relevant, that we're using adult learning principles, that there's ready application? All of that's important. And now look at the bookends. On the front end, have you ever done a training, because we're all educators, where people come in and say, I have no idea why I'm here. I was just told to show up. Well, are we setting them up for success? Like they're not the sponges that we want them to be. So what can we do? How do we invite them? What can we do to get them excited to think about, okay, when I go through this training, there's going to be an ask of me or an expectation that I'm going to apply this. And can I think about that ahead of time? Is there an assignment in terms of go talk to somebody about this topic before you come into class? And then on the back end, it's how are we reinforcing? You know, there's the forgetting curve, which is we forget a high percentage of what we learn in a classroom. No matter how dynamic and hard all of us workers work as trainers, we know that they don't remember everything. So how do we reinforce it? How do we talk to, and that's not just the trainer, this goes back to learning as a whole organization responsibility. So what's their direct supervisor saying to them? How are there micro learning things that we can do to reinforce those principles? Are we doing in the team huddles, the one-on-ones, all those things that we talked about? Those can all reinforce what they learn in the classroom. So it's really thinking about it as a process, or just much more fluid in terms of learning happens all the time, but there are certain kind of markers that we can really focus on and say, what are we doing before they come? What are we doing while they're there? And what are we doing afterwards to reinforce it?
Wow, that was quite a lot and quite incredible. And I think one of the things, as you were saying that, Marla, that it made me think of is, you know, you go back to that person who is doing education that doesn't necessarily have the background or the comfort level in it. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. There are some incredible educational programs out there. And one of the things I've experienced through my years with Pioneer Network is what a generous sharing group of people we work with in this space. And as Barbara Frank has always told us, we share shamelessly with each other. So there are wonderful resources out there. So that time dedicated to the actual training, you can get a lot of help with. And that gives you the time that, just as you said, Marla, it goes up front and it goes on the back end to make sure that what happened in that training truly lives within your organization and doesn't end when you walk out the door.
Well, and just to piggyback on that, you know, John was talking about the advantages of, or the differences between a small organization and a large organization. I think in a large organization, there is a tendency to compartmentalize things, right? Well, we're divided by departments, and this is the nursing department, this is the social work department, this is the education department. And so we put that expectation on these individuals or this team that they're in charge of education. And in a smaller organization, they just intuitively, you know, they wear 3-4 hats, so they know it's everybody's responsibility. And it's more of a, you know, we use the frame in our work of, it's a relay. So I'm going to do my part but then I'm going to pass the baton to somebody else and they're going to then take it to the next, you know, leg, and then they're going to pass it on. And if organizations, large and small, can think of it that way, I think they'll set themselves up for a better understanding of how learning can really impact the culture.
What a great analogy, the relay. I love that. Well, we've been talking for quite a while now, and oh my gosh, my head is just full of wonderful things. Before we end our podcast, anyone have any thoughts that they would like to share? A last pearl of wisdom?
Just one thing, when Marla was talking, what came up for me, in thinking about our organizations as learning organizations, when I was doing some reading a while ago about learning organizations, some of the work of Peter Senge, he said this thing in there, it says something that just blew me away. And he said, true learning organizations don't even know what they have to learn until, and this is a paraphrase, please, but we don't even really understand what we need to learn next until we're really living the experience. So when all of our organizations that are working so hard towards transformation are living the transformation, then we're learning what else do staff, all of us, need to learn to be able to keep moving forward. I know that's a little theoretical, but it feels important to have time to reflect in that way. Where are we at? What are we learning about ourselves that staff need to grow skills and knowledge and attitudes to go forward? I'm really hoping at the Pioneer Network, people have the space to have some of those reflective thoughts, because gosh knows, we're so busy. People are so busy. To breathe and reflect is not necessarily a part of everyone's day.
Wow. Well, on that, I don't know about anybody else, but I don't know how to top that. So that said, I want to thank you all so much, Anna and John and Marla and Tim and Jackie, for being with us today. And Carrie, we know you're with us in spirit, even though you were not able to join us. We do hope now that you will join us all for further conversation, and Jackie will be there on Thursday, May 19th. We're going to gather together in our kind of virtual learning circle discussion group at 2 p.m. Eastern time. We'll have a chance to talk some more, to explore some ideas, to ask questions of all of our presenters. To get information on that, just go to Pioneer Network's website at www.pioneernetwork.net. And while you're on the website, be sure you check out all the information about the 2022 Pioneering a New Conference event that will be happening in Denver, July 27th through 30th. It's the place where you'll be able to participate in outstanding training live and meet these awesome pioneering educators and get to talk to them and ask them your questions one-on-one. So we're so excited, as you can see, to be able to be together again in person to learn and grow and renew our spirits. So thank you again for listening. We hope to see you at the Virtual Learning Circle discussion on the 19th. Thank you again to our presenters, and wishing everyone a wonderful day.